You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Liberty Podcast. This is episode number 286 of East Andrea's favorite podcast. Jeremiah Morrill here. I'm joined by executive video audio producer, engineer Zach Burcham, and my forever co-host, Mr. Dakota Davis. What do we have planned tonight?
Today's episode features Mr. Jeff Watterson. He is back in the building since his since episode number 236. And he's going to be talking to us about another race that he just ran this January called the Bandera 100K. And it's a doozy. I'm really looking forward to this episode just to hear everything he has to say. We're going to be going through everything. How, like, what inspires a person to run 100 kilometers and the challenges that come along with it. So make sure you listen all the way to the very end of this one. It's going to be packed full of good information.
Normally when we talk about somebody running a race, it's politics, not this running thing that you've had us on lately. This show is about our lives in rural Indiana. We're here to push your boundaries and make you think as individuals. Sometimes we'll provoke you. Other times we'll make you laugh, but hopefully you'll always learn something new. The last time Jeff was here, he got us hooked up with the Caterpie shoelaces. Are you still in the game with those guys?
I am not quite. I ran in Caterpies this race. It's not an ambassador right now. I didn't reapply.
So. Okay. I got an email today with them trying to ask me to be an ambassador.
You should go.
And I was like, my God, they must think I run.
Well, it's a lifestyle shoestring too.
Yeah. So, I've been wearing them. I expect I'm wearing them tonight. Yeah,
so I like them.
I haven't put them on my new running shoes yet, but ever since you were on last time, they've been on my lifting shoes. I love them, especially on those shoes because it's so easy to just take off and on.
It's so simple.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're still liking them because I've got them on two sets now. They said after you were here where they hooked us up with a few, and it's been spectacular. All right. So we just did 20 minutes or so on Patreon. We told stories about, vloggers coming to Indianapolis and risking their lives. We talked about the future and what people might want to see. And we sampled yet again more food.
That's right. Patreon.com/BossHogOfLiberty. That is where you can go to support the show on a monthly monetary basis every month. That is where you can get all of our bonus content. We used to do a lot of trying food on this show, and we used to do a lot of talking about the things that we did over the week and just a more relaxing atmosphere for the guests. All of that is now in the Patreon portion.
We still do that every week.
If you liked that content, then go to patreon.com/BossHogOfLiberty. That's where you can find it. You can also get show notes before the show starts, and you can follow along in real time. Any links that we use for information, that's in the show notes. You also get some free goodies every once in a while. Over Christmas, we sent out free Boss Hog of Liberty t-shirts to every single one of our Patreon members. And that was for folks that are $5 contributors and folks that are $50 contributors. And if you donate at $50 or more a month, then you get a shout out at the front of every episode. And those folks are Mr. Jonathan Phillips, who I'm sure could use your donations for his city council campaign. And then Mr. Anthony Meyer, who is trucking goods across the entire continental United States. And then, of course, Miss Christy Avery, our favorite Norwex dealer.
Now, Christy has an excused absence tonight because she's supporting live comedy up in Fort Wayne tonight. So she's catching us on the replay.
Right.
Or she's being very disrespectful at the comedy show, and she's watching us on her tablet with an ear pod in.
Maybe we're better. Who's the comedian?
It was not somebody that I recognized. Mm. It was, I'm sure they're great,
but they've not
made it big just yet. Did you notice that John's been dressing nicer now? He's dressing like a city councilman. He's dressing like the guy he wants to be.
Hey, dress for the job you want.
I don't know if he got a permit to stand out there in the middle of Trojan Lane, but he took a picture today.
Every time I've seen John, you know, he's a car dealer, manager. So he's always
I mean, he was wearing
sharp dressed man.
He's wearing a blazer.
Yeah.
Fancy. Zach, do the, have you seen any county council people show up to meetings in blazers?
Ooh, no.
You go to every one of these.
City council, yeah, sometimes.
What is the, what does a city council person wear? Do they wear t-shirts?
It kind of depends.
Have you seen them wear t-shirts? The collared shirts? It just whatever.
I've seen you all over the place.
Have you ever seen a county council person show up without sleeves?
No. That would be great.
Mike Guffey, listen to me. Yeah, Mike, I was, Mike, you're my guy.
I was trying to think of like who would. Yeah, maybe Mike. Mike does. Mike is, yeah, I could see Mike doing that.
Mike, you better do it before for the Aaron most part, does, I think just to prove a point.
It depends on where they're coming from. Because like once in a while, like Dickon will be in a t-shirt and jeans, but then a lot of times Dickon's still in clothes from work because I think he came from work. And probably the most casual at times is probably Jerry Walden because he's retired, so he'll show up in a hoodie. But like Lynn Perdue's in a blazer sometimes, or at least a jacket. So yeah.
Jeff, if you were a county councilman or a city councilman, how are you dressing?
Not wearing a blazer.
All right.
Yeah, I mean,
you're just
collared
gonna be
shirt, I think, would be. You
know, yeah.
Button up right. Collared shirt.
Mike Guffey's watching. He says what?
Yes.
Mike, I'm just saying, I think we could speak it into existence, and I don't want you to explain it to anybody, but the fans will know that when you show up sleeveless at Monday's council meeting, they'll know it came from Boss Hogg.
Yeah.
It's not like you're going to get challenged, right? I mean, you're not going to get a primary challenger. Probably not going to get somebody in the fall. Let's just show some independence. Your independent streak, Mike. Let's have some fun with it.
Man of the people.
What about a cutoff hoodie from like 1988?
Oh, a Belichick hoodie?
Yeah, like a crop top hoodie with the sleeves cut off.
Oh, man. I think Mark Coker could do that.
Oh, yeah. Mark's our guy for that.
Mark could wear that. I think that's his era.
I actually have one.
Mark had to be in high school. Mark had to be in high school in the 80s. I think that's his genre.
I made I got a free hoodie from Anytime Fitness, and I got it, and it was way too small. So it was like, I'll make a like old school training hoodie, you know, for like when Ronnie Coleman won the Olympia, that's what he would have worn, like that era, early 90s.
Sean Astin and 50 First Dates.
And yeah. Yes. And so I made it and then I put it on and I was like, this is awful. So I'm not wearing this ever.
My memory of 50 First Dates isn't great. So you bring up
that is
well played.
Very good.
Well played.
But Sean Astin's, wasn't he most in that, was in like a mesh, was he in a mesh tank top? Like I was going to say he's in like a mesh tank top, which I'm not even sure when, like how much cocaine had to be done for society to say this is cool, just to wear a see-through mesh shirt anywhere.
I'm pretty sure it was the, just in Miami, South Florida. Yeah. If you went to the U, that was the thing. All right, Zach, or Dakota, get us back on track. What are we doing?
All right, I'm sorry.
That was a fun sidetrack.
Yep. Jeff, so you were last on episode number 236. I looked back on those episode show notes today, and they were quite embarrassing.
Just over a year ago.
I didn't know anything about you whenever I made those show notes.
Right.
So I was like, have you ever ran a marathon? That was one of the questions in the show notes. And then I asked, do you jog the whole distance? Another red flag.
Another, yes.
So they were really bad. These ones are put together much better, and you can see them at patreon.com/bosshogofliberty. But why don't you go ahead and give our listeners a little bit of a background about yourself before we get into the race.
Before we let him do that, I have to brag on Dakota today because I woke up to him telling us that he ran his first 5K this morning.
I woke up to Dakota telling us
that. Yeah.
Mm.
Congratulations. Well, you beat everybody out of bed. That's the important thing.
I usually do. It's the only time I
get it done.
It's the only thing he can win. All right, Jeff. Now that we've bragged on Dakota and he understands your toil because he's now run a 5K.
Yes.
Tell us.
It's basically the same.
It's the same thing.
Basically.
Yeah. Tell us what we need to know.
So basically, my running career, I started 11 years ago. That's right. Is that right, Zach? 11 years ago. Does that sound about right?
Sound about right. Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, my first 5K was with Zach. Ran it down in Madison, Indiana, at Riverfest. I decided I wanted to run, so I started running. You know, kind of that, you know, whatever.
Forrest Gump?
Yeah, Forrest Gump. That's what I was trying to say, yeah. So, yeah, I decided I wanted to run, so ran a 5K. Then a friend of mine was running for a marathon. Went and watched her finish, and I decided, hey, I want to try to run longer distances. So after about 5 or 6 years of running marathons, mostly road, some trail, I switched over into the ultra world. 2017.
What is the dividing line into ultra? As in, like, you've lost your mind, and now you're an ultra.
26.3.
Yeah, 26.3. Really, they
over
say
a marathon.
Anything over a marathon, 50K is really the start of it, you know? I mean, don't most
how
people.
How many miles?
Which is 31.
31. Yep, 31 miles. So that's normally the start of ultra trail running is a 50K.
Okay.
So that's kind of where
it's starts. And it's trails, not roads.
Yeah, you can do both. I mean, there's not as many... It's not as many long distance road races like that are ultra marathons. There are several though.
So, I read about an insane 50K that is just in an indoor track.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine.
So you're doing
that's 200 meters.
Right. You're doing just constant circles around an indoor track until you finish. I mean, that is an ultimate test.
Well, and so Grimes runs 100-mile races. On tracks, 400 meters at a time.
Who is this?
Ron Grimes.
What did he?
Is this a local?
Yeah, he was a teacher too. He was a science teacher, and he's just kind of like, running guru. I don't know. He's coaches. He's coached like track and cross country and stuff. But he's just like, he's a bit of a running institution in Newcastle.
Yeah, in Newcastle, I mean, you know who Ron Grimes.
If you're out in the morning, early in the morning, before the sun comes up in Newcastle, you'll see somewhere between 2 and 4 to 5 guys. Now they kind of walk more than they run around Newcastle, and Ron is one of them. He's one of the core group guys that's always out running around.
I mean, we were marking the cross country course this fall at Memorial Park, and Ron was with me, and he had done 10 or 12 miles that morning. I mean, he's late 70s. I mean, that's what he did was he would run 100-mile races around track. Which is a totally different setup than running trails, like you know, what I do. Not something I would want to do at all. I mean, I wouldn't want 400 meters for 100 miles.
Pull your mic in a little closer to you, or dip it down, one or the other, and you'll be. I don't know.
All right,
maybe it's see. He's got you very sensitive over there. I don't know. It is what it is.
All right,
I'm just causing difficulty for Zach.
Yeah, it's all right.
So you started into the ultra world in 2017. Was your first ultra a trail?
Yes, it was. So I ran, I kind of decided, hey, if I can run a trail marathon, then I will sign up for this 50-mile race. So I did January, I guess it was maybe 17, did my first trail marathon. 17. First trail marathon, which took me like 5 hours and something. It was mud. It was ridiculous. It was over in Eagle Creek.
Okay.
So I did that and then signed up for my first 50 mile. 3 weeks before my first 50 mile race, I sprained my ankle at Westwood. Mm. Like completely just blew it out. Like it was, my wife made me go get x-rays. She's a physical therapist. She made me go get x-rays to make sure that it wasn't broken. Like I wanted to race the 50 mile. And she's like, no, you cannot do that.
You ran after that.
Yeah, I did. I ran 4 miles. So I did on Sunday, I sprained my ankle. Me and him and Casey ran 4 miles the next Saturday. And I hobbled along and I showed him a picture of it after we got done running. And he's like, I wouldn't have let you run had I known your ankle looked like that before the run.
Thanks.
So I foregoed that first race in March. I went down and volunteered. I already had a hotel. I already had the time off. I went down and volunteered for that race. And that was huge for me to go down there and volunteer. I worked in an aid station.
To get the exposure for what the event is and to get an idea of what the culture looked like.
Yeah, and the culture was just so welcoming. Like we got there on Friday night to volunteer and I didn't know anybody. I mean, I talked to the race director and that's it. And he's like, I talked to him when I signed up. And so we got down there and just met all of these people, and they were just so welcoming. They were like, you know, hey, you know, what's your background, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I was supposed to sign up for this. I was signed up to do the 50-mile race, sprained my ankle. You know, my ankle was this big around still. So we actually worked, me and my wife worked, check in that night, and then went to the first aid station. So that was a 4-loop race. So we were at the aid station at the loop. Okay. They came by that. They came up, got to that, went on the trail, came back in every time. So then when they got done, they had like a 2-mile stretch they had to finish to the end. So just seeing the different people come in, and you know, people who are like, I don't want to go on or whatever, you know, you can stop. There was varying distances, but to see the people and the camaraderie and how everybody was just, everybody there was to help everybody, you know. And you got to the point where, you know, since I was at that first aid station, people would come to me immediately. Hey, I need this water filled. And you kind of got to, you know, kind of got to know the people out there running. Hey, I need this water filled with tailwind. I need this one filled with water. You know, what snacks do I need and stuff like that. So it was a cool experience. I don't know that if I wouldn't have volunteered, if I would have actually got as deep into ultra running as I did.
Gotcha.
Because the atmosphere is just so different. I mean, it's such a core group of people.
So you, I was trying to do the math. You first started into the ultra world after 5 years, mm-hmm. after your first 5K.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Because I didn't run in high school. Didn't run. I mean, I was.
So what was it that, why did you decide to start at all?
So actually, Devin Bell, I don't know if Devin Bell, her husband, Chad, I worked with Chad. We would go down to the river at Mike Royals' house, and Devin was training for her first marathon. And so she'd get up Saturday, Sunday mornings, and she would run while we were down there on, you know, weekends. So I said, hey, I'm going to run with you the next morning. So I ran with her the next morning thinking, you know, I was mid-30s. I can run with her. It's no big deal. I wanted to die after like 2 miles. I'm like, I can't do this. She's like, well, we still got a mile to go. So then that was Memorial Day weekend. The following July 4th, we went down to the river. I said, you know,
this is your 5K.
Oh yeah. So I was like, it wasn't quite the 5K yet, but I was like, you know, I'd been on the treadmill. I can keep up with it. Yeah. No, I still couldn't keep up with it. I mean, even after trying after a month of keeping up, so I couldn't. So then I told her, I was like, hey, we're going to do a 5K at Riverfest. So that was in August. So another month went by. I trained a little harder. I remember at one point we were at mile 2.5, and she said, okay, we're going to push all the way to the end. And I was like, I'm pushing. This
has been top gear.
There's not another gear. And so, you know, I finished that race and kind of got hooked. I really liked it. Did the Black Cat here local. And like I said, Zach was down at the Riverfest, did the Black Cat local, with my brother, went and watched Devin finish her marathon. And at that point, you know, I'd only been running a couple of months, and I saw all these people come through. And the cool part about it was we got there with about 3 hours and 30 minutes on the clock. So we saw this guy come in, and he's just flying, just happy as can be at 3:30 and just blow through the finish line. 20 yards behind him is a guy that's, you know, dragging, just barely coming across. And I watched that from 3:30 till we left at like 5 hours and 30 minutes. And it was just a continual cycle of, you know, highs and lows. And I thought, man, I want to be a part of this, you know, this long distance running part, not just 5Ks. I want to be a part of the long distance part of it. Just because there's so many, I mean, there's just so many variations, and everybody's cheering, and it's you know, it's just exciting. So I did that, you know, just road marathons and stuff like that, some trail races. And then in 2017, after 5 years of running, I got into the ultra world.
So is this a product of, and this is in the motorsports world, Zach and I, we see this based on the geography of where you're at and where you grow up as to what you have access to. Mm-hmm. You have Westwood here, right? Which is a pretty significant trail system to be able to run around this lake.
Yeah. 9 mile. Yeah. I get right at between 875 and 9.25 every time. So
is having a place like Westwood the reason why you're able to train to do the ultras?
It is. It is nice because, you know, if I didn't have those trails, I mean, Summit trail system's not that great. If I didn't have those trails, I probably wouldn't be able to train as well for the trail ultras. I would have to do a lot more traveling. I mean, you go down to Southern Indiana and do that, but being so close, it has helped me tremendously because I spend most of my weekends out at Westwood. You know, for me, Westwood is huge. Like you said, I mean, it's local. It works. You know, maybe if I didn't have that, I wouldn't run so many trail marathons, you know, trail races. I would do more running road stuff. So it is kind of a product of, you know, where we're at.
So when you were with us last year, you had just been in Wisconsin?
Correct.
And did an 80-mile one where you're damn near doing the Iditarod as an individual?
Correct.
In the snow?
Right.
And you did well in that race?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So set the stage. You, instead of being in the Arctic cold, you went the complete opposite for this 100 miler.
Right.
Where was it? What was the race?
So it was first, it was 100K. I don't want to 100K. Don't want to confuse anybody. 63 miles.
They're both impossible.
Yeah. Yes. So on that race, and I can maybe show later, there's this buckle. For ultra marathons, you get a buckle as a lot of your, instead of getting a medal or whatever, you get a buckle. When I first started in 2017, looking at races, man, some of the first races I looked at, like, it was that buckle. I mean, like, it's a rattlesnake. I mean, it's pretty cool. And pretty in cool. 2017, I was like, okay, I want that buckle at some point. You know, once I get into this, I want that buckle. Life happens. I never got a chance to go down to Texas in January. You know, it's hard to go the second.
Right after Christmas.
Right after Christmas. It's hard to go down there. I mean, I had to take my kids out of school to make this trip. So there was provisions for that. So this summer I had a chance to go pace Amy from Caterpie. I became friends with her. I had a chance to go pace her at Bighorn Mountain race. She was actually doing a 100-mile race. So I went and was crew and pace. So in those longer races, you can have somebody come and run with you, you know, run beside you to make sure, A, make sure you're safe. B, keep you on pace so that you're not slacking off so bad. And encourage you. You know, you're the last 80 miles, you're the last 20 miles of this 100-mile race, and you're beat, you know. So I had the chance to go down with her and help her with that. Her good friend has ran Bandera the last 3 years. So while we were out on course, I was like, man, I've always wanted to do Bandera. She's like, well, Robert does Bandera. She's like, well, let's do Bandera. So that kind of sparked the, hey, let's do it. Well, then when we got back, we talked about it more. Her friend Robert was going to do it for sure. She talked to some other people. We kind of got the logistics going that we can make this happen. You know, I had to make sure, A, I could get my kids out of school. We had decided to have a foreign exchange student. So we have a foreign exchange student right now. So we had to get her out of school, trying to work out all the logistics of that. But it worked out to where I could go and kind of get this dream of having this buckle. You know, I don't want to, you know, sound vain that I'm just chasing this one buckle, but I mean, it was a goal of mine, you know.
Well, when we were texting and I was like, bring the buckle with you, that thing looked really cool. And you said, it's the whole reason I went.
It is. I mean, it was literally the whole reason. I mean, that was it. I mean, I hate to be, because I've had several people ask me since then, you know, why Bandera? I was like, honestly, I want the buckle. It's got a rattlesnake on it, and it's really cool.
That's why I wanted you to bring it.
Yeah,
I like belt buckles too.
Yeah, it's really neat. I was really excited about it.
So it is in just outside of San Antonio, Texas. It's Hill Country State Natural Area.
Right.
It's in Bandera, Texas. Is the town it's named after.
Yeah, like 10 minutes. I mean, like, it's 10 minutes from the town of Bandera. It's a different area. It's not what I expected from Texas. I'm not big on knowing what Texas should look like. You know, I've mainly been in the northern part. It is definitely a hilly area. I mean, it is definitely not quite mountainous, but I think we are at 1800 feet elevation at one point.
Oh, wow.
For those that are listening, you're 1000 to 1100 feet in Henry County.
Yeah. So it's not Smoky Mountains, you know, but there is definitely some hills, you know. It is definitely hill country. It's not what I expected in Texas.
It's not tumbleweed in West
Texas. No, it's not. It's not the tumbleweed of West Texas.
But all of your training for the race happened in winter in Henry County, Indiana.
Right.
And then you went to just outside of San Antonio, Texas.
Right.
And Central Texas.
And I wasn't quite smart about that. It was a lot hotter than I expected. Watching the weather, I thought that it was going to be maybe mid-60s. So that kind of bit me in the butt for this race. You know, I trained everything in the winter, and I thought I'd be fine. You know, I didn't expect it to be as bad as what it was. So that's where things kind of went crazy during the race.
Do you generally, like, I know there's... People seem to be divided on this whenever they're talking about running outside. Some people like have an easier time breathing in the cold weather, and some people much prefer warm, dry weather.
So I can't, that was one of the biggest issues with this race, is I struggle in hot, humid weather. So me and Zach did a road marathon in Columbus, Indiana, 2013, I think it was 2013.
Yeah.
It was one of the worst road marathons. It was my second one. it was hot and humid that day.
Yeah, I think he told us.
Yeah, he's probably told you about it because it's just the absolute worst race. I mean, like, he wanted to run into an airplane on the strip. I mean, it was.
I wanted Indiana Jones myself so bad.
So for me, running in the humidity is absolutely horrible. And that's what happened when I got down there. I didn't expect it to be as humid as it was.
And it's out of season for you.
Yeah. And
you're not running in July and September, right, or July, August, September here. You've been in, we've had some unique humidity here lately.
Well, and we have, but
it's not the same.
It's not the same. You know, it's been 30 degrees, you know, so it was different. You know, and maybe in August or September, it wouldn't have affected me as much. But I got down there, Saturday race start, and it was starting to sprinkle. It was like a heavy fog, you know. So it was starting to rain. It rained on us for most, from like the first 4 miles, it rained on us. Well, then once that rain stopped, I got to the second aid station, and I looked at my wife, and I said, I can't breathe, you know. And she said, it's humid. I mean, she knew exactly what was going on. It's humid. So after that second aid station, which is about mile nine, things started, like the wheels started coming off. And when the wheels start coming off at like mile nine of a 63 mile race, I mean, that's not good. That's a
horrible feeling.
Yeah, that is a horrible feeling. So I hit that second aid station and just continued on. I mean, and then, so the sun then came out, the heat came out, it started getting hot.
It's and still more humid.
Yeah, and more humid. And it just obliterated me. So, you know, and that doesn't take an effect that
do you look at yourself like a battery, like you've got only so much and you think I can't get the 63 miles, or how do you when you know you have a problem and you're 10 miles in, how do you mentally sort that
at that point? You don't. For me, it's not a matter of quitting. I mean, I knew that it was going to have to be like,
you're getting the freaking belt buckle.
I'm getting the belt buckle. I mean, I literally have taken my kids out of 3 days of school. I've traveled 20-hour drive to get down there. I've put, you know, my family through all of this. I'm coming home with a belt buckle. Now what happens is my goal times start going whack, you know.
It becomes complete.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, instead of, my plan was under 13 hours is what I was really, I really thought. The other guy that was doing the 100K with me, he, you know, kind of followed my training a little bit. He was, you know, he thought that under 13 was a good goal. Even if I went, you know, under 13 and a half, you know, somewhere in there.
This race isn't entirely in daylight then, is it?
No. So at that point, you know, we started at 7:30.
It's January.
Yeah, January. So at 5, it was 5:45 or so when it started getting dark. And that was on my second lap. So this is it's a 50K loop. You do it twice. So I know all these things that I'm doing, I have to come back and do again. So at that point, like,
but you know, if you drop something, you got a chance
you can come back and get it
in about 5 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's funny. Cause that was at every aid station. They're like, we'll see you in about 5 hours. You know, that's when, as soon as you left, we'll see you in about 5 hours.
And they act like that helps.
They act like that helps. At that point, I'm dying. So I'm like, it's going to be like 12 hours. I know.
So you were hoping, what was your finish time?
16:45.
Wow.
So, you know, almost 4 hours after what? And really, I mean, so sub 13 was my main goal. I really wanted to be closer to 12. And I really thought I could be, you know, I really thought I can get there. You know, I may not be able to go under 12, but I can get close.
But it's still, the cutoff time is like 25.
Yeah, it was some ridiculous. Like, I think at one of the aid stations, I was struggling the second loop, and my daughter said, so me and mom have been figuring out you could sit here for 8 hours and still make it to the cutoff. So, you know, it's like, okay, good. I got plenty of time, but I still, you know, you got goals.
There's a mental game in your head.
There is. Yeah. There is, you know, I'm going for 13. And then there's the fact that, so as a father, as a husband, you know, you have your family out here in the hill country that has zero cell reception. I mean, zero cell reception. So you have three teenage daughters in a truck following you around, one of which is an exchange student with zero cell reception. So they can't get on TikTok and Facebook and Instagram and all the other stuff that they're on and talk to their millions of friends, because they're chasing you around aid stations in the middle of hill country of Texas. So now it's like, you know, I'm starting to feel bad as a father that, you know, I've got them trapped out here. And So there was a lot of that mental game going on as I'm trying to.
So that's what you're thinking about. Is you're worried that they didn't download enough stuff on Spotify.
Right, exactly. Do they have enough? Do they have enough to get done? You know,
well, it's I know the feeling that you're talking about, because anytime that for the past 4 years that I've been, my goal has always been to work out 6 days a week. And there's a lot of times where it's like, I might sleep in on a Saturday.
Right.
And then that means that I'm going to be at the gym during breakfast on Saturday.
Right.
Which should be my stay-at-home mom, wife's day off. Mm-hmm. The start of her day off. And all of a sudden, it's not. And so I'll be in there in the gym working towards my goals and being like, this is incredibly selfish right now.
And
so
then it's hard. Like,
Zach, do you find yourself being selfish when you go out and run away from your children?
No. I'll be honest. Like, and my wife's watching too. I'm like, I do most of my running when like people are in bed.
So that's what I try to do too.
I don't feel super bad. Like once in a while. So like I was off last week. So I waited till after the kids were at school, because my wife couldn't get into school last week. So like, I mean, there's times it flexes around. There's times I get tired of getting up in the morning, but Jeff's been along with me. Jeff and I have run 20 miles before 8 a.m. Yep. on a Saturday.
Yep.
And so when that happens, then if I have to take a day here or there and I run during the day, I'm kind of like, okay, this is my, like, I do enough. I really do my best to minimize the impact of that on my family. So no, so I don't, if I need to, I don't feel too guilty about it.
But the point of all that is to say, to run 17 hours, right. I can't even imagine the guilt you were feeling.
Right. I mean, cause I'm almost 4 hours. Yeah.
Even though like, you know, they're in 100% support of you.
Right. They are.
They don't want you to feel guilty.
No, they don't, but it's hard because you're like, and so at one point, so we had, you kind of backtrack a little bit. There was six of us total that went down to run. So me and Robert, did the 100K. Amy, Caterpie Amy, did her and her, another friend of hers, did the 50K on Saturday, and then two other friends did the 25K on Sunday. So, you know, we had, I think there was 14 of us counting the kids that stayed in the Airbnb. So, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, at this point when I know I'm going to be late, you know, Amy and Sean should have been done. I think they were done at like, 5 o'clock, 5 in the evening. So, you know, I should have been done at 8:30 in the evening. And at this point, I'm not going to get done till midnight. And, you know, I knew Amy would stick around and wait for me to finish. So now I'm not only, you know, I'm keeping other people, not just my family, you know, I'm keeping other people awake at this point.
So when you budgeted 13 hours mm-hmm. and you're going to go 17, does that change the calories you think you need to consume, the you know, what do you do to get yourself fuel to go 17 hours instead of 13?
So the good thing about one of the great things about this race, Tejas Trails Bandera, is it's almost, I mean, for being a trail race, it was set up like a road marathon. I mean, they had at mile 5, mile 10, the next one was at mile 20. I think they had 7 aid stations total. So, and all the aid stations were stocked pretty heavily. So I was planning on, there was one long, I think it was seven miles was the longest I had to go. So in my pack, I had some food with me. This was a lot different than Descobia, where I had to carry everything.
Right.
Sled.
Yeah. And in Descobia, I had a sled. This, all I had was my pack with two running bottles and a little bit of food stashed just in case I couldn't make it in that 7 mile stretch, you know, just in case I needed something in there. I have my watch set up to eat every hour.
Yeah, I'm borrowing one of Jeff's old watches, and in an hour it yells at you to eat when you're running.
Yeah, so because I will forget.
What are you eating every hour?
So I try to get
like the frog fuel packages or
no,
whatever.
No, I don't. I do not like gels. I do not.
We talked last week. It's going to be mile 4 for the Newcastle Marathon. It's going to be Primo with their chicken Alfredo.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer real food. Now,
just throw meatballs at people.
I've eaten a little bit of everything. So in this heat, it kind of hindered how much I could actually eat. So like if I'm running Westwood, I'll take Honey Stinger waffles with me.
I love those.
Yeah, so I'll carry those. I had one or two of those during the race. Granola bars, Mott's fruit snacks. I mean, just really anything that's easy to eat like that. I prefer those over the gels. I know a lot of people use gels exclusively, and that's fine. I just don't. After 8 or 10 of them, you know, it's just like, ugh, it's horrible. You know,
also, as you get dehydrated, that stuff you put in your mouth, it just sucks all the moisture out of your mouth, and then you're like choking.
Yeah, it's just not.
I use jelly beans. They make a sport bean, and I like jelly beans because at a certain point, I just swallow them like pills. I don't even chew them because I'm like, this gets it. Because you'll take a bite and you're just like, the first when you're early, you're not dehydrated, it's not too bad. But you take a bite and you have like heavy syrup in your mouth. And
Zach,
you're like, this is gross.
I'm thinking about a jelly bean that goes down the wrong pipe, and you're just choking to death.
You're running down the road
on a jelly belly.
The only race I've had to fuel at in like the last 5 years is the Mini, and they have an ambulance every 100 yards. So if I'm going to drop dead, that's a great.
That's
if I end up at the infield care center, great. I'm like, that's perfectly fine. But yeah.
So your wife posted a picture of you at an aid station. You were drinking an L81 and eating Pop-Tarts.
So Pop-Tarts is a big thing. I love Pop-Tarts.
And that's something I tell people all the time because I'll talk to people about the podcast that they ask like what kind of people are on. I always say, I mean, we have everybody, politicians, and then we even had an ultra marathon runner. And people always ask, an ultra marathon runner?
Right.
Yeah, this dude's crazy. He ran an 80-mile race.
Yeah.
And I always tell people, I asked him what his diet is like, and he said he eats like a teenager.
I do. I mean, honestly, that was mile. So that picture was mile 31. That was the end of my first loop, start of my second loop. I come in, I mean, and I was just spent. I was done. I hadn't sweat. So that was, it was bad. I hadn't sweat since 2 aid stations before. It actually got to the point where, so at the 1 aid station, Chapa's, I poured ice straight into my shirt, into my pack. So that was the only thing I could use to control, you know, my temperature.
Wow.
So then we got to Yaya's, which was that next aid station. And it was just all exposed. They call it the racetrack on their thing. It's supposed to be the fastest part. And it's just all exposed. I mean, it's wide open. And it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And here I am.
In the Texas heat.
Yeah, in the Texas heat. I'm already not sweating. Haven't been sweating for 2 hours. I get to that aid station. I'm like, you guys got ice? And they're like, yeah. So I just put it straight into my pack. So I had water in one bottle and I had electrolytes in the other. And it was, I knew I had enough electrolytes that I could stay hydrated. So I was using the water and just dumping it on myself. Like I was trying to get my shirt wet to where any breeze would just try to keep me. And it's like, no, not sweating is not good. I understand that. I slowed down. It's not like I was pushing myself to where I was going to pass out.
What is that? What's the name of the condition? Once you get too dehydrated, is it rhabdo?
No, rhabdo is the other one.
Rhabdo is where like you're. Mitochondria start exploding or something.
Yeah, I can't think of what it's called. There is a name.
We're like,
there's a technical term for
brown or whatever.
Going horribly wrong.
Yeah, things going horribly wrong. So I was, you know,
but
I was,
basically your internal radiator ear is broken.
Yeah, completely.
And you are trying to mechanically cool yourself.
That's all I could do. That's what I couldn't regulate at all. So then when I come into that aid station, the loop, my wife and kids were just like, you know, what do you need? What do you need? What do you need? And I'm like, I just need to sit down. I need ice, you know? So they got me ice in a water bottle and I'm drinking just ice water, which just felt so good because all my other water was so hot. So my youngest daughter, she's like, Dad, do you want a Pop-Tart? And I'm like, yes. I mean, like I would love to see my face.
Genius idea.
Yeah, it was genius. So I ate a Pop-Tart and a half, one package or, you know, 3/4 of a package. I drank the L8 because I was like, do we have any cold L8s? And they're like, yeah. So they ran back to the cooler, grabbed me an L8, and I'm drinking.
You're pretty serious about the L8s because I'm sure those are not on the shelf in Texas.
No, they are not. I had to bring them. And what sucked was our Kroger was out. So I had to stop in
Kentucky yeah.
and make sure that I got them on the way down.
For those that are listening to Boss Hog across the country, L8 is the most regional of regional. Indiana barely has it. It is a Kentucky soft drink.
Yeah, growing up.
It is like ginger ale for half of Kentucky.
Yeah, growing up with all my family that lived in Tennessee and part of Kentucky, it was like going down to visit. It was always a big deal.
You got to get an L8. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they started having it in Indiana, and it lost its specialty for me.
Well, and I try not to buy it. I try not to buy it unless it's a special occasion here in Indiana. You know, I don't just keep it in my house. But like you said, when you go into Kentucky, like that first gas station, that's
still special to go.
Right, you go and you grab that Ale 8. I mean, it's just the way to do it. So that's what I had, an Ale 8 and a Pop-Tart at mile, 31 at the 50K. And honestly, that like brought me back. And so for the start of that next loop, I really felt like I was
certainly hope the people from Kellogg's are paying attention.
Yeah. What flavor of Pop-Tart? We need to know.
Strawberry.
Iced or no icing?
Iced. Strawberry.
And with sprinkles?
So it's iced strawberry, iced blueberry, brown sugar and cinnamon, and then the rest of them, I don't think they exist. I mean, there's really nothing after that.
You're not getting through on s'mores.
I think I'd switch the blueberry and the brown sugar cinnamon.
Yes. Okay.
But strawberry's on top.
Yeah. Strawberry's always on top. So
iced or not iced, honestly. Yeah, it's just the best.
I haven't had Pop-Tart in 20 years, but I gave it up as a teenager, apparently.
Exactly.
So I was going to ask you, and you're talking about how you're eating. So one thing that I've been noticing lately, for the past 4 years, I've tracked my food in an app. It's called Chronometer, and it's just kind of it's a habit at this point. And I've never really paid attention to my micronutrients before. I've always only paid attention to how much protein I get for recovery's sake. And so my mom and also my grandma have got high blood pressure, so I was reading up on that after talking to my primary care physician about it. And that's a call back to the Patreon episode. And one of the things that you can do is try to pay attention to your sodium and potassium ratio. And as I did more research on that, as I'm like, I wanted to look into this, it also plays a big impact in sports performance. Right. So you're talking about your electrolytes and keeping up with your electrolytes and your hydration. Are you tracking any of that kind of stuff whenever you're training or
leading up
to it?
I'm not great at that type stuff. You know, at tracking. If I download a food tracker, it's to make sure I'm getting enough calories, not to track specifics. You know, and I wish I was better at some of that stuff, but it just seems like, you know, I just eat. You know, if I'm tired, I eat. If I feel like your body well enough to manage it. Yeah, and that's kind of how I do it. And it's not whether it's right or wrong. I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm not an elite athlete, so I am not an elite athlete. So, you know, I kind of wing it on those things. So, you know, even during that race when I'm pushing, I'm like, okay, I need this, this, and this. And I was using Liquid IV as my electrolyte for that race. Mm-hmm. It's simple. You can buy it here. So that's why, you know, a lot of people buy stuff that you got to get online and stuff like that. For me, Liquid IV was cheap.
They're electrolytes.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter.
So Dakota's definitely going to want to do one of these crazy races.
I hope so.
He's already angling and figuring out what he can do.
The lady I went and got fitted for running shoes last weekend. And the lady was like, "So how'd you get started running?" And I was like, I've been into physical fitness for like 4 years. Never ran because I hated running from high school. I ran track and I hated it.
You just ran track to find his wife. And
yeah, it worked.
It worked.
And so I'm like, but there's always been this thing where it's like I listen to people like Cameron Haynes, who's an ultra marathon runner, and I love listening to David Goggins. Jocko Willink is another one who does the rucks with a weighted vest. And I'm like, that part's always been missing from my physical fitness regimen, but I'm like, I do the rowing machine.
Right. You know, it's the same.
Yeah. But then Travis came up. He said he's going to do the half marathon. I was like, this is my opportunity.
Right.
And so told her that story. And then she goes, and then I said, I also have a friend who does ultra marathons. And that was really cool to talk to him about it. And she said, so you think you might do an ultra? And I was like, no, listen, I struggle with 3 miles. This is going to be
So that's the question, Jeff, you know, looking at where he is now. And, you know, I know that Dakota's going to want to achieve something. What, like, if you're, and this is for the audience as well, he's getting ready to do a 5K. He's getting ready to do his first mini. what are the next steps on that ladder, and what's a reasonable path?
So I thought I wanted to be an Ironman and do an Ironman triathlon. And I read an article that said at the end of at the start of an Ironman triathlon, they're not punching, you know, they're not checking your ticket to make sure that you ran a half Ironman or you ran this many sprint tries. I mean, really, there's no, you don't want to go say, hey, a couch to 100 mile, you know, training plan, but there is no step. I mean, if you want to go straight into ultra running in a year, year and a half, I mean, it's all, that's one thing I've learned is it's all training.
There's an entry blank and they'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you can sign up right now and in 6 months go try to run your first 100 miler. You know, there is steps that you need to make sure that your body's taking, but for me, there's no clear cut. Okay, you need to do a 5K first, you need to do a half marathon, and then do a road full, and then do, you know, a trail full, and that. There's no clear cut. You know, my first ultra was a 50 miler. You know, some people, I didn't run my first 50K until I'd already ran 2 50 milers and an 80 miler. So there's no, you know, there's no clear cut path, I don't think. The key is to make sure your body's ready, you know, because it is. I mean, I was out there for 17 hours. You got to be able to move for 17 hours.
Right.
And it's not, it doesn't seem like that's so bad. You know, I can walk around Kings Island. I can walk around Kings Island all day, you know, but
a 17 hour road trip is beyond all comprehension for most of America.
Yeah.
And you're saying, well, you know, running for 17 hours doesn't sound that bad.
And it's not all running. I mean, it's moving, you know, it's adventure hiking.
But see,
you know,
what, to the extent. With your 17 hours, what does that put your average pace at?
I think it was 16 minute miles. I think that's what it was. Let me look real quick. Because I haven't ran since then, so it should be pretty easy. Should be pretty easy to find.
But does that factor into...
That's total. That factors in...
Yeah, so that factors in you sitting and drinking some soda and eating a Pop-Tart.
So
you're actually running on average.
Yeah, so here, I can give you that information. So the total was a 16 minute pace for 62.26 miles. So my average moving pace,
and he's pissed about that, Dakota.
Yeah,
Dakota's shaking his head. He's
like, the pace that people consider like running, are like that's elites, like that can actually hammer out. Yeah. Like I think that was the winner sub-9.
Winner was just
under.
Yes, and then Courtney Dewalter set a course record for female.
Yeah.
So my moving pace was a 15:21. It says so. I didn't get, you know, too crazy. It looks like I had about. It says about 45 minutes of downtime total, which is long for me in a race.
But that's every,
we had 14 aid stations, you know? So if I spent a couple minutes at each aid
station. That person that ran sub-9 hours, what's he look like?
No different than me. He's a little more muscular than I was, but I mean, no different than
usually kind of wiry, but that's about it.
They're not super thick.
And a lot of you look at them and you're like, okay, they don't look like, yeah, it's not like a typical body style you're gonna see, just like, oh, that's an ultra guy. And sometimes, like, usually a lot of times those races, I know you mentioned, you got in the show notes, there's a mention of the Western States. There was a guy that won the Western States by such a margin that he went back, cleaned up, took a nap, got up, and waved in the second place runner.
Yeah, Walmsley. Yeah, you're talking about Walmsley.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, yeah, just Jim, like, Walmsley obliterated the field. So
yeah, so Western States, this race was a qualifying race for.
A good segue.
Yeah, so to kind of go into that real quick, so Western States is a 100-mile race in California. Starts in Olympic Valley, ends in Auburn. It's a point-to-point race. So this race, I kind of had some history on it, but after talking to you today, it started as a horse race called the Tevis Cup.
Hence the belt buckle.
Yeah. So yeah, hence more than likely where belt buckle started. It started as a horse race. It was their goal to see if they could get these horses to do 100 miles in 24 hours. So they started this in 1950s. So then in the mid-70s at some point, a guy decided he was going to try to run beside the horses and see if I can make it in 24 hours, you know? So he did it the next year.
Was he drunk?
No. I mean, he did it the next year. He decided to bring a buddy along. And, you know, so then within, that was early 70s. By 77, they started the race. So now Western States has blown up. I looked at some statistics. Last year they had 7,000 entries.
Wow.
Into Western States for 369 spots. They can only have 369 runners because it goes through some tribal territory and you have to have permission.
You got some headcount.
Yeah. So you have to make sure.
That was my big question on this, because the Bandera 100K that you did, it said that if you finished on the website, today it said that if you finish in under 17 hours,
correct,
then you would put your name would be put into a lottery to possibly be chosen for the Western States 100 mile. And I thought, is there really that many people vying for a place in a 100 mile race that they have to do a lottery?
7,000 entries is the statistics I looked for 2023. So the race is in June. So it was 7,000, maybe 7,500. So to kind of put it in perspective, I don't know how much you know about other running, but Western States is kind of the Boston of, okay, of the ultra world. Yeah. It's kind of hard to get into. It's kind of that prestige. Oh, you've ran Western States, you know, so it's kind of that prestige of,
I assumed it would be like the Moab 240.
Yeah. So
something insane.
Yeah. So it's not, I mean, those 200 races, they're just now starting to pick up. And yeah, I mean, it's got a little niche group that, of people that do it. But for most ultra runners, they know Western States. You know, everybody knows this person that knows this person that went to Western States or knows something about in that trail running ultra community, they know Western States. So the Bandera is a qualifying race. You have to have, at this point, there's so many people to enter, you have to have a qualifying race to get there. Bandera was also what they call a golden ticket race. So the first and second place, male and female, get automatic entry into Western States. Uh-huh. So that's why Bandera turns out to be, you get a lot of big name people there. Like I was lined up with Courtney Dewalter. John Kelly was there. He's a Barkley guy. A lot of bigger name people that were there.
You know, so is there like in ultra running, is there, are there crown jewel races like the Bandera, Western States? Or yeah, what are the?
So there's Western States, there's Hard Rock, there's the Hurt 100, which is in Hawaii. So those are kind of, you know, the ones that everybody's going for. Hard Rock is one that's hard.
Where is that?
That is starts in, man, it's on the tip of my tongue and I can't think of what.
The Hurt was just last week.
Hurt was last weekend in Hawaii. Hard Rock starts at a crazy elevation. I think I want to say it starts.
We're talking California.
I want to say it's Colorado. I want to say it's Colorado. I can't think of the actual town that's in. But then there's Leadville.
This is a statistic that'll make your head hurt. It has. I'm trying to look. Oh man, I lost part of it here.
Hard Rock. West.
Yeah,
Silverton, Colorado.
Yeah. So it's nuts.
In
33,000 foot climb. Yeah. Oh yeah. My God.
Yeah. So I think it might be a loop because it says there's a total of 66,000 feet of elevation change. So I'm guessing it's a 50 mile loop twice. So boy, yeah.
So it's the thing about the Hard Rock is I think it's a 36 hour cutoff.
The average elevation of the race is 11,000 feet, Zach. You've got no air.
Yeah.
Try to do that coming from Indiana.
Yeah.
Sucking thin air.
Right.
They make the masks.
Yeah. You make a mask and that's what, you know.
I don't even think, I know somebody, we knew or anybody that's got the mask and he's like, he doesn't think it's the same. It just limits how much air you can actually inhale. Right. But like ultimately the quality of the air you're getting is still a level of quality for wherever you're at, as opposed to if you go to actual altitude. You're just not getting the air. I think it's got to be different.
There's also the difference in blood flow.
Yeah. Just like
there's a lot of differences at that elevation.
So for somebody like us to go out and try to do Hard Rock would be, you know, you would have to go out and acclimate for a month or so. I mean, 2 weeks at least to go out there and try to
get. Well, there's a lot of athletes.
35-year-old man named Killian Bergalta?
Gillian Jarnett or however you pronounce it. Yeah.
Killian Jornet Berganta, he's from Spain. Yes. He won it for the fifth time.
Yeah, he is superhuman. I honestly don't know.
5'7", 128.
I don't know that he's not a robot. He's an amazing
athlete. One thing that I've always heard from like being a fan of UFC and stuff, they always say, the athletes say, you either need to be there a month in advance to get acclimated, or you fly in the night before.
Right.
So
we did. So the only experience I have at racing at elevation. Me and a friend of ours did a race in Colorado Springs. So started at 6,000 feet, went up to 6,500 and then came back down. And it's different. Like we were running, it was a road marathon and, I was running probably 8:30 pace and I needed to use the restroom. And I said, hey, I'll catch up, drop down to like 7:30 pace to catch up with him. And I was sucking air. Like I was like, what is going on? Like, it shouldn't be this bad. And then I realized, oh, okay, it's the elevation. So
it was like you're running where it's hot and humid.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, I was running where it was hot and humid, which was dumb. But
so now,
so where the hell is it easy? Yeah. It's not easy where it's hot. Is it, is the cold Arctic the best for
For me? I mean, yeah, for me, Tascobia is the way to go.
Cold and dry.
Yeah. For me, Tascobia is the way to go. I love that race. I mean, and I'm hoping to go back next year. So
I've only been running for 6 weeks, but I can tell you that the day that I ran where it was simultaneously 98% humidity and raining was awful.
Yeah.
It was like huffing and puffing. Like,
and then you can't happening? Get the water just stays on you. There's nothing you can do. I mean, it's horrible. And that's how I was for about 4 or 5 hours at Bandera.
So your daughters and your wife, I presume they said that the next race is going to be the hard race in Hawaii.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So that's a really hard race to get. My friend just actually ran it. It's a hard race to get into. You like have to do, volunteer hours. You have to,
you have to work your way.
You have to work your way into that race. So that's a hard race to do.
All right. A technical question. Do you run with the what's the thing you put on your head, the head sock? What do y'all call it?
A buff or the, like a
yeah?
Was just a beanie or like
no.
a
no? There's a whole. I don't want Dakota to say the word because he said it wrong last week. I think.
Oh, a balaclava.
Oh,
balaclava.
Yeah, I don't.
I call them baklavas all the time.
Yeah, baklava.
Kind of called a baklava, and I thought, I think that's food, but I didn't want to be judging.
I said baklava.
Same thing. Yeah. By the way, I want anybody who wants to be wildly entertained, look up the Hard Rock 100. It's hardrock100.com, and just read some of the warnings.
Yeah, it's nuts.
And stuff. It's like there's the cutoff is to allow you time to hide in caves during storms. And it says, let's see, there's lightning. It said, so, you know, if you get hit by lightning, that's your problem. You know, there's snow and it's like there's a waterfall that's got a 300-foot drop directly to one side that you need to get across.
Yeah. Hard Rock's no joke. I mean, Hard Rock's hard to get into.
The record is a 21 hour and change, 21 hours, 45 minutes.
That's Killian.
He's done it. Well, they run it in two different directions.
Yes. They run it two different directions.
Killian was 21:36 and then, Francis Dehaney.
Yeah.
Dehane, I assume he's French, 21:45.
Yeah. It's Hard Rock's it's an amazingly hard race.
All right. So you're running a 17, 18, 19 hour race. You got tunes in your ears?
No, I do not. I only run with music around Baker Park. Unless I'm on the treadmill, which is few and far between. But so if I'm running,
you're just listening for rattlesnakes and bears.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I mean, it's just nice to be out there. You know?
You told me the last episode that you were on, episode 236, and you said that you don't like running with music. Mm. So my first times, two times that I went out and ran, I didn't put headphones on. And I was like, this sucks.
This is horrible.
It's podcast time for Zach, right?
No, I can't listen. Like my watch is my music player. I have a Garmin that can store music on it. And unfortunately, because of the alignment of technology companies, I'm just whatever Amazon Music can put on there. So I just I'm a Google Music guy. So I just throw some music on there. But I haven't had any music for a while. My watch has been shipped off for repair. But I have to have something. Even in the mornings, I'll just run with one earbud in case somebody tries to stalk me.
But there's two songs that whenever they pop on, they really get me going. And those two are A Warrior's Call by Volbeat and then Shield Wall by Amon Amar. And there's someone out there who knows both of those songs that are,
yeah, I don't know either one.
That are kind
of I really thought he was going to tell us it was Country Roads by
John Denver. They're the most like stereotypical
pump up song.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for me, like around Baker Park, I do just because I zone out, but I just don't, you know, and in this race, you know, you're out there. I don't know. You're out there in nature. You just kind of want to be out there.
Yeah, I guess trail running would be a little
different. It is a little different. And I just like to listen. And I didn't see any rattlesnakes. I didn't see any, you know, there was no wildlife out on the course. Unfortunately, I would have loved to have seen something in my misery.
So how many people are out there running?
Man, what was there?
Talking dozens, hundreds.
500.
That's a big, big event.
Yeah, yeah. It is a big event. Bandera is a big event. Because it's a golden ticket race. So everybody's out there. So the funny thing about, you know, that whole Western States 17-hour cutoff, I don't care that much about Western States. It's not on my, now that I got a qualifier, I may try to get in, but not, don't really care. So I was, I don't know.
I believe you.
No, seriously, I was 18, I was 18 miles into the race and somebody said, I'm just trying to beat the 17-hour cutoff. And I was like, what 17-hour cutoff are you talking about? He's like, the Western States cutoff. You have to be in by 17 hours. I had no idea. I knew it was a qualifier, but I had no idea there was a cutoff.
How quick is the turnaround? If you had qualified and they say, okay, you can run this other race, is it 6 weeks later?
So, no, actually, I would. Or do you have to wait the following year? 24. I'm qualifying for 24. So I was looking at that today. Like I said, I don't know. I looked up more today than I had looked up ever because Western States is not – it's hot. I mean, basically, I've always said – I have no desire to go see the Western States because it's
California. Shouldn't be too humid.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just
it's in June.
It's in June. It's the end of June. It's a net downhill race. June. Yeah, the end of June. It's a net downhill race. You start at 7,000 feet, go up to 8,000, and then you end at 1,000. But it's just, I mean, it's just
very hilly.
Yeah,
very
the Lake Tahoe area
climbs 18,000 feet and then drops 23,000 feet.
Ooh.
So if you for you, if you want to watch a documentary on Western States, a good one I like is it's called A Decade On. It's about a guy who 10 years ago, a 10-year span, was going to win Western States, collapsed 100 yards before the finish and didn't finish. So 10 years later, he goes back and tries to do it.
No, he actually just picked him up.
You can't. You have to come over. He has to finish.
Who
under,
says who?
Yeah, the Western can't. States. You can.
You can't.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
They actually.
You will complete it.
Yeah. You have to do it under your own power. So watch that documentary. I think you'd like it. It's called A Decade On. Not plugging it. I have no affiliation with it, but it's a good Western States. A good Western States documentary.
Let's talk about physically.
Mm-hmm.
What was your recovery like? I'm sitting here. My quads hurt. My knees hurt.
So unfortunately,
and I just ran 3.3.
So my recovery was a 20-hour trip drive home. I raced Saturday, got done at midnight. I got to bed about 2 a.m. after having some Reese Puffs Captain Crunch berries the peanut butter ones on the back of the porch. Had those about 2 a.m., went to bed, got up at 7:30, 8 o'clock. We went and watched our friends Bob and Tina finish their race, and then I hopped in the car, and we drove from Bandera to just outside of Texarkana. So I think we drove till 11 o'clock that night. My wife did help drive that part of the trip, and then we got up the next morning and drove back to Indiana. So that was my recovery. I sat in either driving or sat in the passenger seat. And unfortunately, because it wasn't physical that got me down at the race. It was the heat.
Yeah.
I really wasn't that, I was sore. I mean, don't get me wrong. I wasn't, I could have ran 3 to 5 miles on Sunday. I mean, but I was sore on Sunday.
Do people take it seriously in the, oh my God, I can't drive 20 hours to come in and do the race? In the conditioning, do they say, you needed to fly in.
Yeah.
I need a private jet.
Some people do. I mean, obviously I drove, I got there, I left Wednesday morning, got down to Texas.
In motorsports, you're always searching for somebody to blame or something to blame when it goes horribly wrong. So I'm just trying to help you find the excuse.
Yeah. So yeah, it was the drive. Definitely. If I could have had a sponsor to get the flight down, I could have definitely finished a lot better. Actually it was all the heat in my, it was crazy. And the courses, course is nuts. I swear at one point that there was an easy section of the trail that they brought toddler head size boulders in. They wheeled them in and just put them in because I didn't see any other rocks except for on the trail. So I think the course officials actually came and brought extra rocks in. It was just such a rocky course. Just big limestone boulders that you seemed like you had to crawl over. So
did you see the ambulance at all?
I didn't see. No, I didn't see anything. I heard stories from last year or 2 years ago. Friends were telling us that one of the lead females fell on one of the rocks, busted her face completely open, blood everywhere.
Oh, boy.
And I didn't see any carnage.
Didn't see a pool of blood or outline or anything?
No, I didn't. It's surprising because that's what I expected, especially with wet conditions. Yeah. I was told that's what I was more scared of than anything, I felt pretty confident with my running ability and, my managing the heat. I thought that I was going to break a leg or something, but, none of that. So, I didn't see anybody toted away and anything.
So you woke up Sunday and you felt pretty good.
Yeah, I did. I mean, and my recovery is pretty decent. It normally doesn't hit me till Tuesday or Wednesday, but I wasn't walking funny. I could have ran 3 to 5 miles.
What are you doing for recovery?
Pop-Tarts. Like
not just specifically for the race, but for training every day.
So
life.
And I haven't gotten into the habit as much of this training cycle as I was for Tascobia, but I do a lot of Epsom salt baths.
Okay.
So at Tascobia, and before Tascobia, I was running every day. So I would come home. It did not matter. After every run, I would soak for 20 to 30 minutes in Epsom salt. I mean, and it really helped.
Have you ever done a float tank?
I haven't. It's on my list of things to do. I really want to try a float.
Okay, so a place to float in Indianapolis is a great place to go. It's a very clean facility. They're very nice. I've done it a handful of times. Love it.
Right. So it's on my goal. I read, like I said, my wife's a physical therapist, and several years ago she had a class, and I read some of her literature about float tanks, and I was like, man, that sounds like something I'd like to do.
Almost every time I've gone, I've walked out with a different experience.
Really?
Even though the pod has been the same.
Right.
It's different.
Yeah, it's something I would like to do.
Depends upon the mushrooms he's doing as he gets into it.
Yeah, so Jeff probably tell you that him in a sensory deprivation situation for too long might be problematic.
Yeah, I don't know how that would work. You know, I don't know how.
I thought that about myself. And then the first time, I was just kind of like, I didn't let myself relax enough the first time.
That's what I'd be afraid of my first time.
And then the second time, I fell asleep.
Right.
And I woke up like, I slept so good for that hour that I woke up thinking like, oh my God, I've been in here for hours.
I've been here for days. What day is it now?
Yeah. Like freaked out that no, I was just in there for an hour. And then all of a sudden, like I was like trying to get out of the pod and then all of a sudden the lights start turning on telling you know your time's up. So I'm like, I only sleep for like 45 minutes.
Right. that's something that's on my list of things I'd like to try.
Yeah, it's good.
And then I bought a Theragun. I got a Theragun. I used it. You know, just those type things is what I do for recovery.
You ever used a Shakta mat?
I have not.
Okay. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Is it like a TENS unit where it's like a,
no, it's like a roll-out mat that's got these little circles on it that have all these sharp points that come up, and you lay down on it, and you can put it on different parts of your body. And the whole idea is you put all that pressure on with these sharp, like needle-like points, and it just draws blood through the muscle and towards the surface of the skin. So you're basically just trying to pull fluid into areas that are sore to help get nutrients.
Dakota has a portable bed of nails.
Right.
Sounds interesting. It literally rolls up. I keep it under my nightstand.
It sounds like hepatitis on wheels.
I can kind of hit two birds with one stone. If I want to sit and meditate or pray, I can sit on the Shakta mat and do that at the same time while I'm getting it right on my glutes. It's very nice, and especially like right after squats.
Right.
You know? It's very good.
It's real nice if you want nails in your ass. Yeah,
right. Yeah. It does. It takes time.
Yeah,
I've
never heard of it. Never tried it.
So. I recommend it a lot. I asked for one for Christmas for years ago. My mom got it for me, and I've liked it ever since.
Right.
Yeah. So the last question here: do you have any kind of a mantra?
You know, I've been asked that before, and it's like it's mainly just that. I can do anything for 10 more minutes. You know, I can keep moving for 10 more minutes. You know, that's kind of what kept me going. You know, it's just like, I know I can do this. You know, even if I'm moving slow, I know I can do it. So I don't necessarily have that mantra that, you know, I replay in my head over and over, but,
running is stupid.
Yeah. That's, you know, it's just like, I just got to finish.
I saw that question. I thought if Jeff answered honestly, it would be the afterwards. Right. He's like, running is stupid.
Yeah, it's just,
I'll see randomly get a text from Jeff every once in a while. Running is stupid.
It is. It's
marathons are stupid.
I labeled a run.
I have that written down here because I have written down liking running because while you're running, are you like, I'm having a great time. It's like lifting weights. If I'm lifting heavy in the gym, I'm having a fun time.
Right.
Like I'm really enjoying myself. And then I also have a day where I like to do calisthenics, and I don't like doing that. It sucks. It's hard. It's exhausting, but I feel great afterwards. Same with running. It's been 6 weeks, and I said today, I'm like, I still don't like this at all. I'm just making myself do it.
So it's when everything clicks, you know, to the mundane runs, just the everyday, I got to get some miles in. I mean, yeah, it's not like ideal, but man, when it's close to sunset and the legs are just clicking just right. I mean, it really is a great feeling. If I'm out at Westwood and things are just going good and like you're just moving through the woods, and it just feels good. So those days, yes, I absolutely love running. Now, okay, 17 hours in Bandera. No, I mean, I considered quitting running for the rest of my life out there. You know, it was just hard. It was hard. Right. I mean, I'm not sweating. I can't breathe. You know, my family keeps asking me what I want. I'm taking dill pickle juice shots at every aid station just to stay my electrolytes and stay hydrated. And it's just, no, it was not fun. There was, you know, I thought about, you know, what went right with this race and what went wrong with this race and those type of things. And it wasn't fun during the race because everything was going bad. But the thing was, is like, I had to troubleshoot everything. So no, during the race, it wasn't a blast. But then after I got done, I realized, okay, I did fight, you know, I fought tooth and toenail, you know, like I almost felt bad for getting the buckle. Like I didn't deserve it. You know, I mean, I worked for it. I did.
But you realize like I endured.
Yes. And that was kind of like, it's finally taken me 2 weeks to realize, okay, I troubleshooted this whole race. You know, I dumped ice on myself to regulate myself. I made sure that I was eating even when I didn't want to eat, because I was too hot and nothing tasted good.
You engineered your way through it.
I did. I mean, I really did. So at the end of it, it was like, okay, I am defeated, but I still conquered this.
I beat it.
I did. Yeah. I beat it as hard, as much as it threw at me, you know, between, you know, getting nighttime farther. And I hit nighttime in probably one of the more technical, harder parts of the race where I shouldn't have been. I should have been already through that.
Zach, I hear this and I think of the 24 hours of Daytona.
Yeah.
And a car that, you know, had three spins and it went horrifically wrong and you've lost the right front fender, but you saw the checkered flag come out at the end of the race. You completed the event.
Here's one thing, because I thought of a question and I've never even thought of this before, but like, I understand the good run things. I'm trying to think, I don't think I've ever had one of those runs at a race.
Where it went horrifically wrong or fell apart?
No, had a good run.
It felt really good.
The great run where everything's clicking, because if you kind of do, then you're going to run yourself harder and make yourself more miserable because you're at a race. But yeah, those do happen. But I don't know. I don't think that's ever happened at Earth. I remember at this last mini, I was like, I had a goal. I hit the goal. And as I came in the last mile, I'm like, this race was uneventful and that's a success, but it wasn't like I felt great. But you do have those. You do have good runs. There's times it's like great runs. But yeah, that's almost always just like a random training run in the middle of, you just like.
And you can't, you don't know when it's coming.
No, you don't.
I mean, because any other training day.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, because you don't know that those good days are coming. And I guess that's why you keep doing them, because, you know, you get through the mundane days to get to those days where, holy crap. And I, you know, like one of my fastest runs at Westwood was my in-laws were camping out there. And I just said, hey, I'm going to take my clothes and I'm going to run out there. And it ended up being like my fastest. I didn't even start in the Big Oaks parking lot where I normally start. I started at the campground, hit the trail and went around. And it was one of the fastest laps I've ever. That just clicked, you know.
That's why I got. So you have the same experiences in weightlifting, and that's why I started getting like so hardcore about tracking my food and stuff, because it's like I wanted to try to figure out,
right.
Figure out what worked.
Why are these days happening when they happen? Still, some days it doesn't make sense. Some days I will go out to El Chili and I'll have a fajita and drink a 34-ounce Miller Lite. And then the next day I walk into the gym and I feel freaking amazing.
Right.
And then there's no duplicating it. And then I might do that 2 weeks down the road.
Right. And you feel horrible. Like
absolute crap.
Yep.
So you just don't know.
You're looking for data points and you don't know if they're from the food, if they're from the sleep, if they're from another activity.
There's so many different things.
So many people don't factor in all of other life stresses as well.
Right. We were talking about that
earlier. There's so many other life stresses that people just don't realize. They just, okay, I'm going to go run and this is my workout. You know, running is my workout. Mm-hmm. Well, I've also done this, this, and this that is not a workout, but I've stressed my body or I've stressed myself, you know. whatever is going on in your life. I mean, it's that mental stress takes it out on your body as well.
Right. Yeah. So when we were talking about it earlier this week, I had an awful day running on Tuesday morning, and I texted Jeff because I felt bad about it. I was like, this sucks. Why did this happen? Everything felt tight and hurt, and I'd cut off my run like 3/4 of a mile shorter than what I wanted it to be. And I texted him out of frustration purely. And then I thought about it as I cooled off and went to work and stuff. And I was like, I didn't even have time to shower yesterday. Like, how do I expect my body to be recovered,
right,
you know, appropriately? So that, but you don't think about
it. But you don't think about your training. That was just work. I did work. I mean, that's right. Not a big deal.
That wasn't normal. This doesn't count.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And people, so many people don't do that. And I mean, I guess, you know, I think, you know, down here, you got any tips for people? I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is just, you know, don't be too hard on yourself. It's not going to come. And like I've always said, like if I stopped running in that first mile when I didn't, you know, that first mile sucks. I don't care what you're doing. I don't care if you're going out for a 30-mile training run or you're going out for a 5-mile training run. The first mile normally sucks, you know, so you just got to get past that and keep going and then pay attention to the other stressors in life and what's going on. And don't be so hard on yourself, you know.
Yeah, especially if you're like if you're training like weightlifting or whatever, it takes a mile to just like loosen up. I think you said something in chat. I mentioned it too. I was like, man, I was like, I mean, I have some days you can overcome it, but I have like a 1/10 of a mile run to get to a road to determine where I'm going to go for the morning for the run. And I can usually tell you how things are going to go before I get that 1/10 of a mile. Now, sometimes I can pull out of it or change or whatever. This morning just sucked. My friend this morning I was like, I shouldn't feel this crappy and I shouldn't be going this slow. But you're just like, man, it's one of those days. You're just going to move on with it. And then you prepare. So like, yeah, you don't get too beat up. Like the worst part is like for Jeff, he says he's like 8 or 9 in. And he's like, yep, the wheels are coming off. And that's the hardest part is like, you're like, oh, what do you think about? Well, Jeff had 12 hours or 15 hours to think about. And the answer is everything. You think about everything that went wrong. You think about everything you've done in your entire life.
You think about every run that you cut short or every run that you did this or what you had for dinner the night before or that your family stuck out there with no, you know, cell service. And you think about everything.
I mean, not even. Because you have time to think about
everything. Right.
This is why I'm thinking, God dang it. I want a mindless podcast to take my mind off the self-abuse that's going to happen.
Yeah.
All right, Zach, we probably are at the point in the show where we need to start doing final thoughts or Dakota's going to fall asleep in his chair on me. What are the takeaways? What are the takeaways you want me to know, Zach?
I don't know, because it's like Jeff and I did quite a bit of running before his race. We haven't run since then. Jeff hasn't run since then, which is good for Jeff. Jeff's got getting a break. So I hadn't really caught up with him, so I kind of knew a little bit. Like I was trying to pick out details. I didn't realize his wife had no cell phone reception because normally she's really good about keeping everybody up to date on when Jeff's off doing dumb things. But you can tell there's no cell phone reception because the first picture I saw was like probably like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when they finally got their cell phone reception. But yeah, just like from what Travis was talking about last week, since it's been a running centric couple of weeks, is that feel free to bug. Like if you know a runner, chances are you can bug them and they'll answer your questions and they'll offer whatever advice because, especially like recreational running community, you're racing yourself. You're not racing anybody else. So it doesn't matter. And it's a great, I haven't dealt with the trail community, but like in the mini is its own deal. Like if you go do the 500 festival mini, if you go to hit a local 5K, they're great. Local 5Ks are fantastic because you'll run the same people over and over. I see Nate Lamar, who's a local guy I can't remember for sure. I see Nate at every 5K. And they're great. The people are great. I've only experienced one guy at a race that I wanted to like punch in the head for being just a prick to other people during the race.
Are we going to use names?
No, I don't know the guy. I could tell you the intersection I was at. It was near Fountain Square, and it was a race where you passed by, and they'll do this a lot. It was an intersection where you went through twice. And so we went through, and we were probably like a mile and a half or 2 miles ahead of the people that we were seeing at the other side of the intersection. The mini marathon has an intersection that's like this, and he was yelling at them, I'm beating you, I'm beating you. And I would be like, you're an asshole. Like, nobody's like, don't be like that. So those people are so rare because I've raced so many times. So yeah, go sign up for a 5K. Couch to 5, never done Couch to 5K, but that's supposed to be a killer program.
It's and a then really
go find yeah, go find a 5K. Go find a fun 5K. Just like I said, one of the funnest races I've ever done was I was traveling for the 4th of July, and I found the equivalent of Jeremiah's neighborhood. I jokingly call Caucasian estates, white estates. I found a neighborhood like that in North Carolina that was having a 5K for the 4th of July, and it was the most fun I've ever had at a 5K. It was me, a stranger, and all these people were super nice. Oh, where are you from? It was great. So go find a local 5K. They're cheaper than some of the big races, and enjoy yourself, or go find whatever. You can walk them. Go find dead stuff. This isn't the best weather to go do it. The weather sucks right now. But go train on a treadmill, smarter than me, and then come out in the spring and have 5K and enjoy it.
Don't train on a treadmill.
I mean, yeah, I'll admit. So also, run outside, though, because
it's worth it.
It's not as hard as you think it is. Mm-hmm. You can run in shorts all year round in Indiana. It's not that big of a deal. But yeah, and you don't have to invest in a bunch of clothes. Like, get like, especially like Walmart stuff, just get like a tech shirt as a base layer, and you can build off of that easy. Yeah, go find a race and do something and get outside. And it's, if nothing else, it's great to just clear your head and get a little time away from people.
Jeff, what have we forgotten?
I do want to thank my family for being out there real quick. They, like I said, 17 hours. They're probably closer to 18 to 20 hours out there. So it was huge for them to be out there. All my friends that were out there, you know, Amy stuck around and watched me finish. You know, it was great to have my family there. In every aid station, they were there. You know, my kids were there. They ended up getting a cut out of my head and have it on a stick.
That's all.
So yeah. So, like a, you know, so
like
I,
a fat
I,
head.
Yeah. Like a, yeah. Yeah. You guys got one somewhere around here.
You and Aaron Dickens, man. Dickens got one too.
Yeah. I didn't know she got it, and it was the second aid station, and there she stands. So I'm rolling when it comes in. But yeah, I got to thank them. So, you know, other than that, I mean, it was just like Zach said, just get out and do it, you know, get outside. I don't care if you go walk for 20 minutes and, you know, running isn't everybody's thing, but my big thing is just find your passion, you know, whatever that is. I mean, that's what I try my hardest. You know, I'm not big on social media, but I try to put that out there that anybody can go do these things if you just put yourself to it. And it doesn't have to be running. It can be biking, or it can be walking, or whatever. Just, you know, just go do it so that you're outside doing something.
Create an activity.
Yeah. Yeah. Just go do it. Be passionate about something. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's knitting, you know, go be passionate about something, you know, cause you can do it. You know, I guess that's my biggest thing is, yeah, I went out and did 17 hours on this trail, but the biggest thing is I just set my mind to it and I did it, and everybody can do that. I'm just a normal guy with two kids, an exchange student, and a full-time job. You know, it's, you can do it, you know. That's my biggest thing. Also, real quick, I am getting a belt made for my buckle, and I'm pretty excited about it. Rustic Edge Leather. She's from Montana. She got it. She shipped it out today. So,
nice. Spectacular.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty excited about that. I was kind of down about the buckle because, you know, I didn't hit my goal, and then found her to get me a belt. So I'm pretty excited about it.
It looks so robust, too.
Yeah,
there is a lot to be proud of in that.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
And I think every day and month that goes by, you're going to appreciate it more.
Yeah, and the more I get into it, like last week when Dakota asked me, I was like, it's not going to be a good show. I'm not going to be happy-go-lucky Jeff that just got third at Discovia. You know, this is going to be, I just beat myself up for almost 17 hours and I'm pretty down, you know, but it's coming around, you know, it's coming around to where I realize I fought pretty hard to get to where I was at the finish. So
noted patron John Phillips says that he's going to be doing a lot of walking very soon. And if anybody wants to get some walking in with them, he's going to have some opportunities. Going door to door in the city council race.
That passion. See, he's found his passion.
That's right. It. Dakota, what do we know?
I wanted to say this quote that I think of a lot, and I told it to Jeff last week when we were talking about this show, and I attribute it to Les Stroud, who's Survivor Man, and I'm 99% sure that's who it was, but I might be wrong.
And it wasn't him, it was Mark Twain.
He always said that there are two kinds of fun. There's the fun that you get when you ride a roller coaster, and then there's the fun that is fun to talk about around the campfire later, but it sucks in the moment. But no one ever remembers the times that they rode the roller coaster. They only remember and tell the stories of the things that sucked. So the second kind of fun. And I think that, like, that's kind of what you've had with this.
Right.
Everybody kind of needs that reminder sometimes when they're walking through life and something really sucks that happens to them, but they have to just do it.
Right.
And then they realize it's one of those things later. They might be sitting around with their family at Thanksgiving and going, remember when? So I try to remind myself of that a lot of times. And that with my job that and working in all kinds of inclement weather and things happens a lot where we'll be sitting around and going, remember when it was minus 30 degrees on Christmas and we were all working and our beards froze? You know, it sucked. But now it's a lot of fun to talk about.
It's like Zach said, he can't remember one race that he can't remember one race that he felt good the whole race. But he can tell you he can tell you every street corner of races that were bad. You know,
so, Columbus,
Columbus. There you go.
Never forget it.
I at this point I'm convinced that Zach can tell you the license plate number of every car that he ran by. He is the most observant.
Oh, I'll tell you what.
Most observant.
I'll tell you what. I'm pretty sure I'm going to witness a crime at some point. So I'll be.
You are going to be well prepared. I just want everybody
that's listening to know if you see me and take me out, you better make sure I don't. I have like.
They're going to have to kill Zach too.
I will give a detailed. I will give a detailed description of your vehicle. Down to the license plate,
and he will probably have taken pictures just because he was doing that anyway.
I phone with me when I run, but yeah, I pay attention to a lot of stuff. I did just like I don't think we mentioned on the show, but I've been harassing the subcontractor for Dakota's employer, and apparently they said that they fixed five street lamps that I reported out that I all see while I'm running. That's one of my pet projects. I got like five different emails today, so yeah, that's my thing to do. But yeah,
well done. 113 days from today, President Doug Bowles told me that the Speedway opens. Because there was a guy on Twitter who's been counting down to how many days until the Indy 500, and I tweeted back and I said, stop counting that down.
It's like Chris Galt.
113 days until it opens.
Yeah, don't skip to the race, man. It's the month of May.
This week, Takuma Sato. Speaking of mottos, no attack, no chance is his motto. And it's literally he will sell himself out. Two Indy 500 wins so far with two different teams. He got announced with Chip Ganassi Racing. He's going to team with Alex Palou,
scary, yeah.
Scott Dixon, and Marcus Erickson. So three Indy 500 winners and a guy that finished second and is a series champion. That is a murderer's row lineup coming into the Indy 500. 113 days away. And because I forced this on everybody, Stingray Rob, the ultimate name, is going to do the full IndyCar series.
I've ridden in a car with Stingray Rob. He almost spun a Camaro out with me in the passenger seat in July.
Think you could get him on the podcast?
I don't know. He's a super nice guy, and he's named after the car. He's named after a Corvette. Unfortunately, some of them, he's driving for a Honda
team. He's going to be in a Honda.
But, yeah, so that was interesting. So, yeah, there's lots of fun stuff happening in the racing
world. So we've got a new favorite, two drivers, Dakota, both born September of 2001 on the same team. 21-year-old Stingray Rob and David Malukas, 3 weeks apart. What were you doing on 9/11? They were being born, and now they're going to run the Indy 500. All right. With that, we say thank you guys very much. We'll be back next Thursday night. And I think we're going to talk about millennial quiet quitting, maybe. We'll see. We'll see you then.